VOA 1, the hits.
Hello, and welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ana Mateo. This program is for English learners, so we speak a bit slower. And our stories are written especially for people learning English. Here are the stories we have for you on today's program. First, the education report. Dan Friedel brings us his story on artistic degrees. Are they worth it? I will return with this week's words and their stories. Today, I talk about wasting time. Then, Brian Lynn will tell us about a woman who is 101 years old and her job. Gregory Stockel will tell us about the struggles many young people continue to face during the pandemic. Finally, we will end our program with John Russell. He will bring us a story about cattle. But first, the education report.
A recent story in the Wall Street Journal newspaper looked at students who went to celebrated universities, such as Columbia and New York University in New York City, for advanced degrees in subjects like art, film, and even social work. Many of the students said they learned a lot. However, when they graduated, they were deep in debt and did not think they would find work that would let them pay back their loans. After graduation, many students reported owing over $100,000. Meanwhile, they were earning just $50,000 a year. One student who received a Master of Fine Arts, known as an MFA from Columbia, Matt Black, told the newspaper he was financially hobbled for life and owed lenders close to $300,000. Students said they spoke with Columbia about the high cost of advanced arts degrees, but never received a reasonable answer, the newspaper reported. Education experts say these schools are very wealthy with large endowments, which could be used to pay students' tuition. The universities, however, prefer to ask the students to pay the full cost. One famous school, Yale, is changing the system. Its theater program will be free to students after a $150 million donation from music and movie producer David Geffen. The data for the Wall Street Journal story came from the United States Department of Education, and it was restricted to the 2 years after a student graduated. When representatives from the universities in the story were asked about their graduates' financial problems, many said 2 years is a short period of time. They said their graduates slowly increased their earnings over time. In subjects like math, medicine, science, and computer programming, advanced degrees are often required for first-year jobs. However, in more creative careers like writing, making movies, or painting, people can be very successful without getting an advanced degree. Kevin Carey is a higher education expert for New America, a public policy research center. He called master's degrees a scam. In a conversation with the website Slate.com, charging people a ton of money to go into any artistic career is often super problematic, he said. Carey also said schools say, "We need the money," when asked about the high cost of their master's degrees. "But everyone needs money," he said, adding, "It is a poor defense." Even in careers like law or business, advanced degrees are no guarantee of financial success. The same Wall Street Journal writers looked at law school graduates from the University of Miami in Florida. They saw recent graduates often borrowed $150,000 to go to law school. 2 years after graduation, they were earning just $59,000. Sergio Castillo is an actor in New York City. He said he owes so much money on his student loans that he no longer pays them. He went to the University of California at Los Angeles and then earned an MFA from the Actors Studio in New York City. He does not expect to earn a lot of money from acting. Was his MFA worth the cost?
I do think it was worth it. I don't put a price tag on my education or my experience. I think it's sort of unfortunate that so many people take for granted education, and so many people like my mother, for example, never got to go to college.
Castillo said students who are thinking about an advanced degree in art should be sure they are doing it because they value the education, not because they want money or to be famous.
There are a lot of other things you can do. Don't go into it for that reason.
Lynn Adrin is a former television producer who runs the Broadcast Journalism Graduate Program in Washington, D.C. for Syracuse University. She said students must ask an important question when they are thinking about graduate school.
Is it worth the investment of all that money for that master's degree, and what is it going to turn into later?
In some fields, people may have better experiences working as an assistant than spending money on graduate school. Adrin warned that the cost of higher education in the U.S. is a serious issue. I just think that there's a reckoning coming in terms of college tuition in general and the bang for the buck that one gets, she said. Kasia Plezinska is a filmmaker in New York City. She came to the U.S. from Poland to study about 10 years ago. She attended graduate school both at Baylor University in Texas and at the University of Iowa. She said she received a lot of financial support from those universities. When asked about the high cost of graduate school in the U.S., she described it with one word: insanity.
It is so insane. I mean, I know friends who are stuck with the debt, and literally they can't, they are not taking risks in life, just even changing the job because they are so afraid.
Plezinska said arts graduate programs can help students meet and make friends with fellow artists with whom they can work throughout their careers. It's even better if the school is in a place like New York or Los Angeles. Those interviewed did not have a solution for the problem of costly advanced degrees in creative subjects. For a school to be of value, Plezinska said, students need to remember why they started making art in the beginning.
It's for the pure pleasure of creating and fulfilling myself this way.
I'm Dan Friedel.
Thanks, Dan. And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. On this program, we explore words and expressions in the English language. Today, we begin with a story about two good friends, Caleb and Corinne. They have a lot in common. They like the same books, enjoy the same movies, and play the same sports. But the friends are also quite different in the way they live their lives. Corinne is a planner. She always has a schedule, and she likes to make lists. She is always on time and knows exactly where she is going. Caleb is a free spirit. He likes things unplanned and likes to see where the road takes him. In fact, sometimes he does not know exactly where he is going. One day, these two friends decided to go shopping together. You might find it surprising that something like shopping would test their friendship. But it did. To Corinne, shopping is an unpleasant task, so she does it as quickly as possible. She goes to stores as soon as they open, and she buys only what she needs. To Caleb, shopping is an adventure. He likes to linger in front of store windows. He looks at the objects for sale for a long time, without even stepping inside the store. This activity that is popular with some is called window shopping. Caleb does not pay much attention to his shopping list. In fact, he usually doesn't have one. He likes to browse, and he says that browsing has resulted in some of his best purchases. Well, he calls it browsing. Corinne calls it dawdling, or wasting time. And that is where their problems started. The two had decided they would have a party. They had to shop to buy party equipment, like pretty dishes and tablecloths. They also needed to buy flowers, balloons, and other decorations. This meant going to several stores. Caleb wanted to browse to help him get ideas for the party. Corinne just wanted to buy what they needed and leave. It was not going well. Finally, when Caleb lingered too long again at a window display, Corinne said, "Can you please stop dilly-dallying? You've been lollygagging this whole time, and I just want to go home." Caleb turned to her and said, "I am not dilly-dallying, nor am I lollygagging. This is how I shop. If you feel like this is wasting time, then you can go home." Corinne thought about it and said, "That is the best idea I have heard all day." While Caleb shopped, Corinne could start making food for the party. It was a good idea to separate and do different tasks. The party was a success, and their friendship survived. Now back to our words, lollygag and dilly-dally. They are funny-sounding words. People who fool around during tasks can be said to lollygag. People who dilly-dally move or act slowly. And as we said earlier, these words also mean dawdle. Lollygaggers, dilly-dalliers, and dawdlers all waste time. We usually use these words to describe people who move or act slowly to avoid doing something unpleasant. Here's another example. A parent might accuse their child of lollygagging on their way to school. Or a teacher might accuse a student of dilly-dallying before starting a test or homework. Sometimes we just say dally, so a parent could warn a child, "Don't dally at the playground after school. Come straight home." Although that usage is a little less common. And please note, when you say someone is dilly-dallying or lollygagging, as Corinne did with Caleb, they might take offense. And that's all the time we have for this Words in Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Anna Mateo. And now, here is a story from Brian Lynn.
Virginia Oliver has been trapping lobster in the northeastern American state of Maine for more than 90 years. And even at 101 years old, she says she has no plans to stop. Oliver recently told the Associated Press she started catching lobsters at age 8. At that time, the electronic traffic signal was a recent invention, and few women were harvesting lobsters. Oliver still goes out to set traps off Rockland, Maine, with her 78-year-old son, Max. She uses a boat that once belonged to her late husband. The boat, called Virginia, was named after her. Oliver is now the oldest lobster fisher in the state and possibly in the world. "I've done it all my life, so I might as well keep doing it," she told the AP. Oliver said she worries about the health of Maine's lobster population. She said the lobsters have been facing heavy fishing pressure in recent years. The lobster industry has changed over Oliver's many years on the water. For example, the sea creatures have grown from a working-class food to a tasty delicacy. When she first started trapping, lobsters sold for 28 cents a pound. Now they bring in 15 times that. Wire traps have replaced her beloved wooden ones, which these days are mainly used as decorations in seafood restaurants. Other parts of the business have remained much the same over the years. She still loads up pogies, a term used in the industry for menhaden fish, to put inside the traps to lure lobsters in. And she still gets up before the sun rises to get an early start on the boat. In some ways, she was destined for this life. Her father was a lobster dealer who started around the 1900s. She joined her father on trips, and that is when Oliver's love of the business began. Wayne Gray, a family friend who lives nearby, said Oliver had a minor health problem a few years ago when a crab bit her finger. The incident required her to have 7 stitches, but even then, she did not think about retiring her lobster traps. Gray said the doctor admonished her, said, "Why are you out there lobstering?" Oliver answered, "Because I want to." After all these years, Oliver still gets excited about a lobster dinner of her own, and said she usually prepares one for herself about once a week. When asked whether she sometimes considers ending her work, Oliver said she just does not see any good reasons to do so. "I like doing it. I like being along the water," she said. "And so I'm going to keep on doing it just as long as I can." I'm Brian Lynn.
Thanks, Brian. Next, let's hear from Gregory Stockel.
Across Africa, many young people are battling an economic downturn caused by COVID-19. The second yearly African Youth Survey found people aged 18 to 24 in 15 countries are losing jobs and changing their education goals. Nearly 20% of the 4,500 people in the study said they became unemployed because of the pandemic. And 37% were forced to stop their education permanently or temporarily. 8% saw their pay reduced, and 18% had to move back home. Finally, 10% said they had to care for family members. The study was carried out by the Ishikowitz Family Foundation, based in Johannesburg, South Africa. The founder, Ivor Ishikowitz, runs Paramount Group, a company that works with space, security, and military organizations. Of the 1.3 billion people in Africa's 54 countries, an estimated 250 million are aged 18 to 24. The study was carried out in large cities and trading centers in Angola, Congo, the Republic of Congo, Ethiopia, Gabon, Ghana, Kenya, Malawi, Mozambique, Nigeria, Rwanda, South Africa, Sudan, Uganda, and Zambia. The researchers were from PSB Insights, an international research company. They were citizens of each country and went door to door for detailed face-to-face interviews. The people interviewed said the pandemic causes great, difficult changes to their schooling, showing the need for more computers and internet access in Africa for online education. Bola Badeo, who is 29, says her work earnings at a broadcast station where she worked in Abuja, Nigeria, were cut in half. She said she could not make it on her pay, $146 a month. She said, "I was already poor, and I was working just for the sake of doing the job." Then, in April 2020, she was let go. "I fell into depression because the whole thing was really sad. I felt I had nowhere to go," Badeo said. After 7 months without a job, she started a home cleaning business, and that has increased her hope, she said. Badeo is one of many who have found different ways to survive financially. The study found that in 2020, About 40% of those who were asked had hope for the future. The pandemic changed that number, lowering it to 31%. I'm Gregory Stockel.
Thanks, Gregory. Now, our last story comes from John Russell.
A small scientific study suggests that cattle can be trained to leave their waste in special areas. The goal of the research was to reduce the bad environmental effects of cattle. In the recent study, scientists trained 11 out of 16 young cattle to use the moolu, a kind of bathroom for cattle. The researchers used a sweet treat to get the cows to push through a door and urinate in the special area. It took only 15 days to train the young cattle. The cows are at least as good as children, aged 2 to 4 years, at least as quick, said Lindsay Matthews of New Zealand's University of Auckland. Matthews was the lead writer of the study that appeared recently in Current Biology. He worked with other researchers on the tests at an indoor animal research laboratory in Germany. Urine contains nitrogen. When mixed with solid waste, it becomes ammonia. The chemical can play a part in environmental problems such as acid rain, Matthews said. It can also pollute water with nitrates and create the pollutant nitrous oxide, he said. Cattle urinate a lot. A single cow can produce about 30 liters of urine a day, Matthews said. In 2019, nitrous oxide made up 7% of all the U.S. greenhouse gases, the Environmental Protection Agency reports. Scientist Brian Hare of Duke University was not part of the research, but said he was not surprised by the findings. I am surprised no one has demonstrated this before, Hare said. The critical question is, can it and will it scale? Scale means to do something more often or in larger amounts. If it could be done, training animals would make it easier to deal with waste products and reduce greenhouse gases, said Donald Broom. He is a professor of animal welfare at the University of Cambridge in England. At the laboratory in Dummersdorf, Germany, the researchers put the cattle in the special area, waited until they urinated, and then gave them a treat, a sweet liquid of mostly molasses. Cows like sweets, Matthews said. If the cows urinated outside the moolu after the training, they got a shot of cold water. Two issues raise questions about the study. Researchers gave drugs to the cattle to get them to urinate more, because they had limited time. And researchers only trained cows to use the moolu to urinate, not to leave solid waste. Urine is a bigger problem, at least in Europe, Matthews said. But he predicted the researchers could train cows to leave solid waste, too. The biggest environmental problem for cattle, though, is the heat-trapping gas methane. Cows release the gas that scientists say causes global warming. The cows cannot be trained to not release such a gas, Matthew said. They would blow up. I'm John Russell.
Thank you, John. And that brings us to the end of our 30 minutes. Some content in this program was provided by the Associated Press or Reuters News Agency. And don't forget to join us again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Anna Mateo.